यमुना तीरवन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शतश्री श्रीमद हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरंग नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरम चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिके ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 6 चैप्टर 12 टेक्स्ट 26 सो बिफोर वी गेट टू 26 देयर आर फ्यू वर्सेस दैट डोंट हैव पर्पोर्ट आई विल रीड देम सो देयर इज अ सेंस कंटिन्यूटी टेक्स्ट 23 श्री शुक उवाच इति ब्रुवाणाव अन्योन्यम धर्म जिज्ञासया नृपा युयुधाते महावीर्या इंद्रवृतौ युधं पति श्री शुकदेव गोस्वामी सेड वृत्रसुर एंड किंग इंद्र स्पोक अबाउट डिवोशनल सर्विस इवन ऑन द बैटलफील्ड एंड देन एज अ मैटर ऑफ ड्यूटी दे अगेन बिगैन फाइटिंग माय डियर किंग बोथ ऑफ देम वर ग्रेट फाइटर्स एंड वर इक्वली पावरफुल टेक्स्ट 24 अविद्यापरिघम वृतः कृष्णाशयमरविन्दमः अरिन्दमः इन्द्राय प्राणिनोद्घोरं वामहस्तेन मारिष ओ महाराज परीक्षित वृत्रसुर हु वाज कंप्लीटली एबल टू सबड्यू हिज एनिमी टुक हिज आयरन क्लब व्हर्ल्ड इट अराउंड एम्ड इट एट इंद्र एंड थ्रू इट एट हिम लेफ्ट हैंड व्हाई विद हिज लेफ्ट हैंड Because his right hand is cut off. Text 25. Satu vritrasya parigham karam cha karabhopavam chicheda yugapad devo vajrena shataparvana. With his thunderbolt named Shataparvan, Indra immediately cut to pieces Vritrasura's club and his remaining hand. Text 26. Dorbhyam utkritya moolabhyam babhau raktashravo shuraha chinnapaksho yatha gotra khadbrashto vajrina hata Dorbhyam utkritya moolabhyam भवौ रक्तश्रवोऽसुरः छिन्नपक्षो यथा गोत्र खाद्भ्रष्टो वज्रिणा हतः Ladies, please. Dorbhyam, from the two arms. Utkruttamoolabhyam, cut from the very root. Babho, was raktasravaha, profusely discharging blood. Asuraha, vritrasura, chinnapaksha, whose wings are cut. Yatha, just as, gotraha, a mountain, khat, from the sky, bhrashtaha, falling, vajrina, by Indra, the carrier of the thunderbolt, hataha, struck. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Vritrasura, bleeding profusely, his two arms cut off at their roots, looked very beautiful. Just like a flying mountain whose wings have been cut to pieces by Indra. Purport. It appears from the statement of this verse that sometimes there are flying mountains and that their wings are cut by the thunderbolt of Indra. Vritrasura's huge body resembled such a mountain. End of purport. Text 27-29. Vritrasura was very powerful in physical strength and influence. He placed his lower jaw on the ground and his upper jaw in the sky. His mouth became very deep, like the sky itself, and his tongue resembled a large serpent. With his fearful, death-like teeth, he seemed to be trying to devour the entire universe. Thus, assuming a gigantic body, the great demon Vritrasura shook even the mountains and began crushing the surface of the earth with his legs, as if he were the Himalayas walking around. He came before Indra and swallowed him, and Airavata, his carrier, just as a big python might swallow an elephant. Wow. Text 30. When the demigods, along with Brahma, saw that Indra had been swallowed by the demon, they became very morose. Alas, they lamented, what a calamity, what a calamity. Text 31. The protective armor of Narayana, which Indra possessed, was identical with Narayana himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Protected by that armor and by his own mystic power, King Indra, although swallowed by Vritrasura, did not die within the demon's belly. Text 32. With his thunderbolt, King Indra, who was also extremely powerful, pierced through Vritrasura's abdomen and came out. Indra, the killer of the demon Bala, then immediately cut off Vritrasura's head, which was as high as the peak of a mountain. 33. Although the thunderbolt revolved around Vritrasura's neck with great speed, separating his head from his body took one complete year. 360 days, the time in which the sun, moon, and other luminaries complete a northern and southern journey. Then, at the suitable time for Vritrasura to be killed, his head fell to the ground. Text 34. When Vritrasura was killed, the Gandharvas, the Siddhas, and the heavenly planets beat kettle drums in jubilation. With Vedic hymns, they celebrated the prowess of Indra, the killer of Vritrasura, praising Indra and showering flowers upon him with great pleasure. Text 35. O King Parikshit, subduer of enemies, the living spark then came forth from Vritrasura's body and returned home back to Godhead. While all the demigods looked on, he entered the transcendental world to become an associate of Lord Sankarsana. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that Indra, not Vritrasura, was actually killed. He says that when Vritrasura swallowed King Indra and his carrier, the elephant, he thought, now I have killed Indra, and therefore there is no more need of fighting. Now let me return home back to Godhead. Thus he stopped all his bodily activities and became situated in trance. Taking advantage of the silence of Vritrasura's body, Indra pierced the demon's abdomen, and because of Vritrasura's trance, Indra was able to come out. Now, Vritrasura was in Yoga Samadhi, and therefore, although King Indra wanted to cut his throat, the demon's neck was so stiff that Indra's thunderbolt took 360 days to cut it to pieces. Actually, it was the body left by Vritrasura that was cut to pieces by Indra. Vritrasura himself was not killed. In his original consciousness, Vritrasura returned home back to Godhead to become an associate of Lord Sankarsana. Here the word Alokam means the transcendental world Vaikuntha Loka, where Sankarsana eternally resides. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 6th canto, 12th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled Vritrasura's Glorious Death. So what an end. In some yoga, many thousands of years ago, it is described that mountains had wings and they could fly from one place to another place. If mountains had wings, right, they could fly, and they did fly. And because they had the ability to fly, it is described that these mountains, they became very arrogant, because they had with them massive power. And we know that power that is not checked has a problem, that it corrupts a person. And we've been discussing about pride. So pride, one of the consequences of pride is violence, cruelty. So these mountains apparently were crushing people one after the other, because they could just fly at will, and wherever they landed, they would crush people. So Indra, whose service is to keep a check and balance of how things are in the universe, he cut off their wings. So from that time, apparently the mountains have been stationary. Okay, so that's the dose of far out for this morning. Next one. So the fight between Indra and Vritrasura. We hear that Vritrasura's two arms were cut off. It was like a big mountain. Even then, he didn't give up fighting. He put his lower jaw on the ground, his upper jaw up in the sky, followed Indra, Airavata, and everyone. Just as a python might swallow an elephant. We don't see a python swallowing an elephant. It's very rare. We see a python swallowing a small deer, if you will, but it can. What it does is it coils itself around the animal, so the animal is immobile, just cannot move, and slowly expands its mouth, takes on one part of the body, expands its mouth in such a way that it can swallow the whole animal in one go. There's no chewing and all that. Snakes can chew, they only swallow. So we've never seen a python, except in movies, anaconda or something, to take away elephants. But apparently there are these kinds of pythons. Anyway, Vritrasura swallowed Indra. And Indra cut off his abdomen, came out with his Shataparvan, thunderbolt, and killed Vritrasura. Now, interestingly, we hear from Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that it's the other way around. That actually Vritrasura killed Indra because he swallowed him. And then he thought, oh, I've accomplished what I'm supposed to accomplish. And so I have no more reason to stay in this body. Let me give up this body. And so he went into this yogic trance by which he can give up his body. In fact, he had left his body and gone back to Vaikuntha, to Lord Sankarshan. And Indra, he took advantage of the silence in Vritrasura's body. The silence means when the soul leaves the body, everything comes to a standstill. Nothing moves, nothing happens. All physical, physiological, chemical reactions and whatever that needs to happen in the body come to a complete standstill. So Vritrasura's body became like that. Nothing was happening. It was like Indra was in a dark tunnel or something. And so Indra cut off his abdomen, came out, and then tried to cut Vritrasura's head to kill him. It's described that his body was so stiff and so strong that it took Indra a whole year to cut off Vritrasura's head. Usually, we see animals on the chopping block, and it's done. So these kinds of, that's a nice story, but there is something that we can appreciate. We can appreciate that those things that are beyond the obvious, sometimes even the obvious are something that we don't understand or we don't have a proper reading of, and it is those things plus the things beyond the obvious that we need the help of the Mahajanas, the great persons. Because it's described, dharmasya tattvam nihitam guhayam. That the esoteric, I shouldn't say esoteric, the actual truths of the principles of dharma are hidden in the heart of a pure devotee. And by their behaviors and by their moving around in the world, one comes to know what those religious principles really are. Because just by reading in a book, one cannot understand religious principles. Why? Because they're very difficult to understand. They're also difficult to apply. We don't know in what circumstance which religious principle to apply properly. We may think, oh, this religious principle is appropriate, but when maybe that one is more appropriate, and we wouldn't know. So for example, in this case, one religious principle is non-violence. After Vritrasura gave wonderful speech, what did he do? He fought with Indra. And after Indra appreciated, wow, what a Mahabhagavata you are, what did he do? Picked up his thunderbolt and fought with him. So one might say, what's going on? Why not just both agree, Prabhu, Non-violence is better. You go your way, I go my way. Let's not fight. Because Krishna says, Ahimsa, Arjavam, these are good qualities to have. These are qualities of knowledge. One who is in knowledge is non-violent. But they know that the higher principle, Dharma se tattvam nihitam guhayam, it's in their heart. And by their behavior, they're showing. And it is difficult to understand these activities. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is described that the activities of a pure devotee is not easy to understand. Vaishnavera kriya mudra na bhujiva. One cannot understand. And they have to be explained. So in this case, thanks to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he's giving us the inside information. The inside information is that Vritrasura was in trance. He had left his body. So it was not that Vritrasura was killed by Indra. Vritrasura left his body out of his own will. And we understand that the soul is never killed by any weapon. Here this Indra had his thunderbolt and he killed Vritrasura. But actually the soul is never killed. Nainam chindanti shastrani. Nainam dahati pavakah. Chindanti shastrani means it cannot be cut by any weapon. So all that is cut is Vritrasura's body. Nothing happened to his soul. In fact, in the presence of everyone, that soul entered alokam. Here described alokam means the that supreme abode filled with the Brahman effulgence. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur tells us specifically that he entered Lord Sankarsana's abode. Because that was his, that was the form and personality that he was very much attached to. So he went back to Lord Sankarsana. So the soul, when it moves from one body to another, it is described that it moves with the ease of changing one pair of clothes to another pair of clothes. And those who do not know this, they lament. Or those who know this, they have no reason for lamenting. So there's a story. An older brother tells a younger brother this story. That there is a well, fresh water well. And some people had planted trees around that well. Generally in older Vedic India, wherever there was a well, people would plant trees. Because that well would serve the needs of travelers. Those who would travel from one place to another, especially saintly persons, they would walk and go. And these places would be where they would quench their thirst. And after they quenched their thirst, those trees would serve as places where they could rest in the shade of those trees. And they would meet other travelers and other sages. And they would discuss. They would share their realizations. They would express what they have realized in the search of their truth, in search of truth. And after they were feeling rested enough, they would move on. So when we hear the story, it kind of sounds obvious. Yeah. That they meet, they take some rest, they spend some time together, and they move on. But when it comes to our own lives, this principle recedes to the background. Because this material world, or this birth, or this life, is similar. It's a place where the soul resides for a while, meets other, travelers, persons who are traveling through the material universe, meets with them, talks, makes some friendship, and then when time comes, has to move on. But what happens is, because of conditioning by the modal nature, one has this sense of possessiveness to that circumstance, to that set of people, and starts thinking, they're mine. How can I separate from them? But death means eventually going from this body to the next destination. And dhirastatra namuhyati. We are meant to culture within this human life this sobriety. Sobriety that, oh, this body is anyway changing. This body will come to an end. One shouldn't be surprised. One shouldn't be caught off guard. But this body will come to an end. Now, when it will come to an end, we don't know. In one sense, it's good that we don't know. Because if we already knew, we wouldn't be doing perhaps what we are doing. Our mind will be too restless, agitated, sorrowful, lamenting, sad, depressed. Because life is coming to an end. We know. So part of living in this material world is that death, which is inevitable. Inevitable means there is no other way. This will happen. It's not like it may happen. Perhaps. No, it will happen. That this inevitability, while it is definitely inevitable, there is just, we're not told when it will happen. So it gives us an opportunity to prepare. And that, now it's not that we don't know that death will come. We see it around us all the time. In fact, even the body that we are in has died many times. There is a sense of continuity, but actually the body has died many times. It is constantly dying. Not one cell in our body remains in a period of 7 years. It keeps changing. It's described like if you're in a building, like this building. I shouldn't say this building, but let's just take any building. And day by day, if you remove one old brick and you put a new brick, pick another brick, put a new brick, you take out another brick. Over a course of time, all the bricks have changed in the building. But the overall blueprint remains the same. But is it a new building or is it an old building? Technically speaking, it's a new building because everything is new. It's just put back in the same blueprint, if you will. Similarly, all cells in our body degenerate and new cells come again and again and again. It's described that every 7 years, everything we have is new. Still, we have this sense of, I am this body. I. The sense of I doesn't change. But the body has changed many times. In that sense, we have died. Except we haven't, that awareness isn't there. Then there is the actual death, where the body completely changes its species also. So it's inevitable, it's a matter of being prepared. And that preparation is to, like we were speaking a couple of days back, to distinguish between matter and spirit. That which is spiritual has no end. And that which is material has no endurance. Najayate mriyate va kadachan. The soul is never born, nor shall it die. That it has never happened in the past, it's not happening now, it's not going to happen in the future either. What is that? Death for soul. It is eternal. What is temporary is this body. It will come to an end. Now what's in our hands, to some extent, is what we want to do with this opportunity. And that opportunity is that we either make it or we break it. Mostly we fake it. But the idea is to make it. Make it in such a way that we go back to Godhead. our original home. And the acharyas, the scriptures, the association of devotees, whole process of devotional service is there to facilitate that. So I'm going to end with this. I want to read something quickly because today is Bahulashtami. It is the day of the appearance of Sri Radhakunda. And for Gaudiya Vaishnavas, this is a very significant day because Radhakunda is considered to be the most important and the most spiritually supreme, if you will, places. So I'm just going to read something from Nectar of Instruction, the very final one, text 11. Of the many objects of favored delight, and of all the lovable damsels of Rajabhumi, Srimati Radharani is certainly the most treasured object of Krishna's love. And in every respect, her divine kunda is described by great sages as similarly dear to him. Undoubtedly, Radhakunda is very rarely attained, even by the great devotees. Therefore, it is even more difficult for ordinary devotees to attain. If one simply bathes once within those holy waters, one's pure love of Krishna is fully aroused. Report. Why is Radhakunda so exalted? The lake is so exalted because it belongs to Srimati Radharani, who is the most beloved object of Sri Krishna. Among all the gopis, she is the most beloved. Similarly, her lake, Sri Radhakunda, is also described by great sages as the lake that is as dear to Krishna as Radha herself. Indeed, Krishna's love for Radhakunda and Srimati Radharani is the same in all respects. Radhakunda is very rarely attained, even by great personalities fully engaged in devotional service, not to speak of ordinary devotees who are only engaged in the practice of Vaidhi Bhakti, which is all of us. It is stated that a devotee will at once develop pure love of Krishna in the wake of the gopis if he once takes a bath in Radhakunda. Srila Rupa Goswami recommends that even if one cannot live permanently on the banks of Radhakunda, he should at least take a bath in the lake as many times as possible. This is the most important item in the execution of devotional service. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes in this connection that Sri Radhakunda is the most select place for those interested in advancing their devotional service in the wake of lady friends, sakhis, and confidential serving maids, manjuris of Srimati Radharani. Living entities who are eager to return home to the transcendental kingdom of God, Goloka Vrindavan, by means of attaining their spiritual bodies, Siddha Deha, should live at Radhakunda, take shelter of the confidential serving maids of Sri Radha, and under their direction engage constantly in her service. This is the most exalted method for those engaged in devotional service under the protection of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In this connection, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes that even great sages and great devotees like Narada and Sanaka do not get an opportunity to come to Radhakund to take their baths. What then to speak of ordinary devotees? If, by great fortune, one gets an opportunity to come to Radhakunda and bathe even once, he can develop his transcendental love for Krishna exactly as the gopis did. It is also recommended that one should live on the banks of Radhakunda and should be absorbed in the loving service of the Lord. One should bathe there regularly and give up all material conceptions, taking shelter of Sri Radha and her assistant gopis. If one is thus constantly engaged during his lifetime, after giving up the body, he will return back to Godhead to serve Sri Radha in the same way as he contemplated during his life on the banks of Radhakunda. The conclusion is that to live on the banks of Radhakunda and to bathe there daily constitute the highest perfection of devotional service. It is a difficult position to attain, even for great sages and devotees like Narada. Thus, there is no limit to the glory of Sri Radhakunda. By serving Radhakunda, one can get an opportunity to become an assistant of Srimati Radharani under the eternal guidance of the gopis. Sri Sri Radhakunda ki Bahulashtami is the day in the middle of night, dead of night, like midnight. Radhakunda was revealed, appeared. So I'll really condense the story because I have a conference call, right? In about 8 minutes. When Krishna killed Arishtasura, who had come in the guise of a bull, and then when Krishna went to Srimati Radharani saying, you know, let's get together, he said, oh, don't come close to me. Stand far away. You are contaminated. He said, why? Oh, because you killed Arishtasura. You killed this bull. Cow and bull are very sacred. How can you kill a bull? This is Gohatya. Krishna said, that's not a bull, that's a demon. Arishtasura. He said, no, no, you killed a bull. You're very contaminated. Until you take bath in all the holy rivers, don't even come here. There are many holy rivers. Krishna thought about traveling all over the Bharatavarsha. So he dug his heel into the ground and immediately made a big crevice, a crater. And then he summoned all the holy rivers. Come here, please. One by one. Gange, Yamune, Cheva, Godavari, Saraswati, Narmada, Sindhu, Kaveri, etc. They all lined up. Yes, please give us some service. So all of you, please fill this place up with water. I need to take my purifying bath because Radharani won't allow me to associate with her without this bath. So immediately Shyamakunda appeared. So Krishna took his ceremonial bath, came out, and he said, now I'm purified. And then Krishna accused her, actually you're the one who's not pure. So she said, why would I buy that? Well, that's because you actually defended and supported a demon. He's Arishtasura. And when I was killing him, or by that you said, no, no, it's wrong to kill him. So actually you're contaminated. You should take bath in all the holy rivers. Now Radharani didn't dig her heel into the ground. Or she and all her sakis, they broke their bangles and they started digging the ground with it. It took quite a while. And still the sacred rivers did not come because Krishna held them back. Don't come. So Radharani is like, no water here. What to do? So they all lined up from wherever Radhakunda is. It's in the area of Govardhan to Manasi Ganga. If you actually walk through, they're not that far. But they all lined up and they carried pots and passed it on to each other and brought waters from Manasi Ganga and poured into that place. And suddenly there was a pond. Then all the holy rivers came and said, please give us some service to do for you, Srimati Radharani. And then they also deposited all their waters there. Then she took her ceremonial bath. And Krishna was so pleased that he said, oh, from now on, I'm so happy that you did this. From now on, more people will talk about your pond, Radhakunda, than mine. Although Radhakunda and Shyamakunda are right next to each other. We discuss about Radhakunda more. This is Krishna's way of appreciating Srimati Radharani's affection for him. So that appeared on Bahulashtami 8:26. No burning questions, right? We're not this body. Hopefully no questions about Radhakunda because I can't answer them. I'm sorry, I'm joking. But we have to end. I have to run for a conference call. And if there are some questions, so we'll pick them up either tomorrow or whenever we get together. थैंक यू। श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय।